this morning with the sun down shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
You talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun down.
Well, no base taxi jack. No time out, Ricky on the board. SP futures down 975. NASDAQ futures down 2. Except they were up pretty huge last night after the market closed with the Palantir earnings. Up 1753 is like 20% move. Blew through the straddle by like twice. And we've been seeing a lot of this, and everybody came on TV and said, doesn't matter, no matter what, it's going to be well over 100, it's over 100. There's no price too high. It's now pushing 170 PE. Doesn't matter. Maybe Trump's going to put it in the sovereign wealth fund, Carl. What do you think?
Well, I don't know about that. That's a little insane. I'll tell you.
What do you mean? Him and his kids trading U.S. money. And telling everybody else what they're buying?
I know. And you know, now that we have a pretty good idea of why all of a sudden the entire Biden family, along with Fauci, were given pardons all the way back to 2014, because the embezzlement that was involved, and which, by the way, is the reason that there's a million dead people in this country alone from COVID, has been uncovered. That, by the way, is the exact reason that the entire left side of the aisle is screaming. And incidentally, notice that nobody on the right side of the aisle seems to be saying anything about it at all.
Well, we all know the Democrats, you can't trust them. They're all scum. We all know that, right?
Well, we all know the Republicans are scum, and we can't trust them either. Oh, by the way, who was president when 9/11 happened? Yeah. So as I pointed out, in both in my column and, you know, in some emails back and forth with you guys and everybody else, it this is from personal experience. Nobody likes it when the auditors show up if they've been doing evil things that they shouldn't be doing. But if they're internal auditors, the whole reason you can't do that as a public company, you can't just do your own audits, is because your own internal audits auditor guys are usually kind of easy to bribe, or just not necessarily even bribe. You can corrupt them whether you do it directly by putting hundreds in their pocket, or whether you just end up with a culture where they're playing with themselves and watching porn instead of doing what they're supposed to be doing, which is, you know, auditing, right?
You know what though, Carol? My view of the world is very jaundiced. I understand that, because I've always been in kind of honest places. If the outside auditors at Pullman or at the CBOE found something the inside guys didn't catch, there was hell to pay.
Oh, exactly. But you know what? Here's the thing. GAO, okay, which is within the government, GAO is the one that's supposed to do the audits, right?
Yeah.
That's the part of the government, that's the organ, if you will, that does audits, okay? And that's their job. That's their entire job. And yet, for how many decades now, they've said that the Pentagon is unable to actually do, you can't audit them. The books do not balance. We don't know where the hell it went. This has been true forever, right? And this has been their official report. Now, this is inside. Now, nothing's been done about this. I don't care whether Democrats or Republicans have been in office. this has been the case. All right. And do you remember the movie Independence Day?
Yeah, except I didn't. I mean, I remember it. I don't know if I ever watched it, but it was a long time ago.
Right. Well, one of the things, one of the sarcastic comments was, you know, the president basically bullies his way into, you know, proof that we've known about alien life for a long time and their craft and this and that. And he says, where in the hell did all the money come from to, you know, to build this damn place? Right? And the guy looks at me and says, you don't really think that the Air Force paid $700 for a toilet seat, do you?
Well, I actually sent people a bill once for parts. I think the toilet was about $800.
The seat. Okay.
Well, I don't know how that. I don't know what the Pentagon does with their stuff, but
I know. Yeah. I'm just saying.
I know.
This is the thing. So,
but I think, Carl, I think it comes down to the people you have.
Well, of course it does.
And I think we're. As we slip away from, you know, having a nun or whatever it is, if you read George Marshall, Soldier and Statesman, when he was in the, obviously during World War II, his generals and the people here did nothing. They bitched a blue streak because I think, you know this more than me, what committee in Congress kind of rides herd on the expenditures of the Armed Services? It's Armed Services, but is it Armed Services Committee?
I think it's Armed Services that supposedly is supposed to do it, yeah.
And I think the guy who was the head of Armed Services, I should look this up before I said something, was Harry Truman. And Harry Truman was an absolute bastard on why did you spend this, what was your bid?
Yeah, where'd it go, right.
Where'd it go? And the generals would absolutely bitch to Marshall about this Truman guy. And Marshall's response was, this is a democracy. They are our bosses. You don't get it.
You don't understand.
You don't understand the process.
You work for them, not the other way around.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but there's a war on. He goes, it doesn't mean you can spend twice as much as you're supposed to.
Right. Well, but this was when we were a serious country.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, this was when the people that built the water system in Flint actually built it, the water system in Chicago, when we built the power grid, when we also understood that in certain circumstances you broke the safety rules, but you knew what was going to happen if you drew the short straw when you did it.
Yeah, I know.
All right. I mean, Rickover, a lot of people don't know this, but the power reactor that went into the Nautilus, the first submarine to transit under the Arctic, which of course required nuclear power because, batteries don't last that long.
Yeah. Hey, we're out of juice. Where are we? Well,
we got this little problem. We're under a mile of ice.
Yeah.
So, but the test requirement for that reactor, it had to run at full power on land before they put it in the submarine.
Yeah, it was kind of surprising. Hal was going to be on later. He talked about it all the time. When he was on the nuclear, Hal did, for those who don't know, Hal will be our second hour guest. In addition to being a college professor, he was a nuclear, I don't think he was an engineer, but he was a guy who worked on the reactors on a ship, but he hated submarines, so he was on a cruiser, wasn't he? But he said that the school for that was in Idaho.
Yeah. Well, that's because there was a reactor complex up there that was essentially the birthplace of the technology that went into those things.
And wasn't there a full model that you worked on, the one that went on the Enterprise?
Yeah. When we first started doing this, of course, we weren't completely sure. You're not going to build the entire ship, build the thing into there where you really can't get it out and then find out if it works, right? I mean, that'd be kind of stupid.
That would be bad.
That'd be stupid. So, so these things had to run on land first. And the one that was put into the Nautilus, it had to make a full power run of sufficient duration to perform the transit without problems before they were going to put it in the submarine. Well, there were some hinky readings that were coming off that the physicists were looking at with slant eye during this test. And theoretically, at least, it should have failed until they could figure out what the blank was going on. Rickover overruled them, and it was installed anyway. Needless to say, it didn't go kaboom, otherwise, but... Yeah, so I mean, there are times in our past that we have knowingly overridden the rules and gotten away with it, and you know, we did it for what at the time was considered allegedly good purpose. But I think what I think is interesting is I was about to, you know, what I was starting on a couple minutes ago, is that there was a time when I was running my company that some financial metrics. And I won't go into the fine details of exactly what I saw, but I observed that a couple of ratios that had been more or less constant over the entire time I'd run the place since I started it literally in my closet, okay, all of a sudden changed. And I didn't have an explanation for why they changed, but they did. And I observed this for a short period of time, a couple of weeks. They stayed changed, but nothing had changed in the services we were offering, in the, you know, in the customer mix. There was nothing observable that I knew about as the CEO that I could explain this. And so I said, I don't like this, because it was a financial thing. And so I called up a guy that I had long trusted to do make sure that I didn't go to jail for screwing up my taxes, okay? And I knew him. He was somebody who had impeccable credentials. He was an enrolled agent and a CPA, and you know, all the other good stuff. And I said, come over. I want you to come over here. I'm going to write you a check, and you know, you go wherever you think. This is what I've observed. I don't care what you look at. If you have any kind of a problem getting access to whatever it is that you need, you come find me. You have my personal authorization to go into any file, into any computer system, into, you know, somebody tells you can't have a password or whatever, you come find me. I'll override it. I'll find, you know, I'll do whatever I have to do to get you into whatever it is you need to. I just want the facts. I want to know what's going on. Well, he did. He found it. And he ran it to ground, and I was not surprised what I found. I was surprised where it got traced, and it was conclusive. And a lot of hell got raised.
Somebody was stealing, or just a screw up?
No, it was not a screw up. It was a deliberate act.
Really?
And you know what? It was. In the grand scheme of things, it was something that could have been gotten away with for a very long period of time.
Okay. Sort of like rolling the penny up into your account.
It wasn't quite like that, but kind of sort of like that, right? And it was conclusively traced, and he did his job. External. Now, we were a private company, so we didn't have to have external audits, okay? But I brought him in to do this. We did our own bookkeeping internally, and then, you know, and then we had outside tax guys, right? That's their job was to make sure the 1120 was right, and you know, and the 941s were filed, and all of this. But that was his job, and so I delegated it to him, and I said, you know, you go where it takes you. Well, what just happened, and all the screaming that you're hearing right now, is in USAID, all right, and another. Agency that is part of this but isn't getting as much yelling, NED. Now these are the problem here is that foreign policy is the exclusive domain of the executive by the Constitution. Congress has the right to set appropriations.
Well, they can't write a check if it doesn't come from Congress.
Well, like I said, Congress has the right to set appropriations. Okay, however, those appropriations have delegated purpose, and they have, and you know, it's this much money for this specific thing, okay? And that's how appropriations work. It's just like anything else. If I, you know, in a private company at Pullman, you have this much money that is supposed to go to, you know, axles and wheels that go on the cars for the train, right? You think?
Yeah.
All right. Well, USAID has been siphoning off large amounts of these funds, and it has been used for black projects to, among other things, interfere in and overthrow foreign governments.
Well, hello, we've been doing that for how many years?
Well, I get that, but all of a sudden, you know, this yes, it has been done, But this is, but that is foreign policy, and it is at the exclusive purview of the executive. Foreign policy is exclusively within the purview of the executive.
Tell that to the CIA.
Well, guess what? Now all of a sudden we've got somebody who's saying, you know what? I wonder where the hell all the money's going.
Well, you know, I have,
and I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem with this. If it is going where it's supposed to go,
here's my. Actually, I have a topic here I want to discuss with you that has nothing to do with it. I didn't really want to get into this, but this whole idea that, I mean, you and I have known, I mean, I think just about everybody has known, where does the CIA get their money? It's, if they don't get it here, they go find it some other place, it appears to me. Now, I'm not conclusive on that. Now, all of a sudden, out of the blue, we get some guy in the Oval Office, and he gets some guy who got $9 billion. He gets him his job. And he gets somehow to, when he shows up at the door, who the hell is he? And all of a sudden, I'm gonna believe Trump and Elon Musk. I mean, why would I ever even? We know that stuff has been going on. I mean, the guy I played golf with, instead of CIA showed up in his class in South Korea and said, "Don't teach anybody over here about labor unions." That guy's getting paid by somebody. Now is it coming out of this unit? Is it coming out of the cocaine trade? I don't know, but do we think that there's no? It seems to me that if you don't give them the money, they go get it themselves. And what am I missing?
Right, but you know what, Chief? One of the things that's been discovered, okay, and one of the reasons that we had this, that all the yelling is going on, is that some of the checks that got wrote, okay, included $300 million a month to an NGO that was explicitly funding illegal immigration into the United States.
That's
$3 billion.
I understand that, but why is it that we have a lot of people that have right wing tendencies on the show, and I don't mind that. But the thing that actually frosts me a little bit, even though you guys are all people I love, you fact check me like there's no tomorrow. You don't fact check these people at all.
Oh no, that's not true. You know what?
How do you fact check Trump?
Well, Chief, I haven't been on your show long enough, but during Trump's first term,
I understand that. You actually were on it during the first term,
huh?
Oh, you actually were on. But I'm saying the dudes, everybody,
not during the first part of it. And by God, was I all over him like white on rice?
What I'm saying is I don't know who these guys are. I don't know if they have subpoena power. Why would these guys open the books? Who the hell are they? Are they standing there with guns? I mean, what is this whole process I'm missing? The part that they're finding this stuff, if they actually are, I'm with you 100%. But this process is kind of weird.
Well, except, hold on a minute now. All right, the screaming is these people don't have security clearances, yada, yada, you know, whatever. First off, yeah, they do, okay, because the president can grant one to anybody he wants. How do you think Hunter Biden had access to all of this stuff? You may not like this, but this is the way the system works, okay? The president has the right to both grant and revoke security clearances to anybody he wishes. There is no override. There is no due process right. There is no ability to appeal. None of that exists.
Is his job listed anywhere? It just seems strange to me.
Well, now, hold on a minute. Now, he can do that. Now, secondly, the people that were brought in that are doing this are people that, apparently, from what I understand, came from SpaceX, okay, and part of their engineering corps. SpaceX does an awful lot of work for the U.S. federal government.
It sounds like the Gestapo.
No, SpaceX is full of people that hold clearances because they have to in order to get their job. In fact, one of the things that Biden went after them for, which is insane, is that Musk was refusing to hire migrants and immigrants. And they sued him, claiming that he was discriminating against these people. In order to do those jobs, you had to have clearances. You can't get a clearance as an illegal immigrant.
I would say that's probably true. I would hope so.
Well, it is true. Yeah. And yet, so Musk was saying, I'm not hiring those people. I can't hire those people. It's against the law.
the idea that I'll take $9 billion from other people versus the government all of a sudden is becoming my auditor. Why does a hair stand up in the back of my neck?
Well, he's not the one that's personally in there doing the audits, but he's got computer specialists, probably some of the best people in the country in terms of being able to run database queries and stuff like this. Okay, I mean that's just the job that they do working for him, and I am You know what? All the yelling and screaming, as far as I'm concerned, if we find all the fraud and we get it out, we put it on the table, and that's where it ends, fine. If these people misappropriate this information, that is a serious felony.
Are they going to walk into the CIA and do this?
Well, you know what? If you cut the money off, they're going to have some problems, right?
I think they're very adept at getting their own.
Well, we'll see how that works out. But I, so far, what I'm seeing here is that we're actually getting the accountability that we should have had over the last 20 or 30 years, and it's been buried.
How about the accountability of Bitcoin being down $10,000 yesterday, and the president signing something and says they're going to put Bitcoin in a sovereign wealth fund, and it rallies back $15,000. I want the accountability. Who knew he was going to say that?
Well, I'd like to know who is. You and I both. And on the other hand, Nancy Pelosi has all of her money because she's been trading inside.
Trading inside is nothing compared to creating the news you're trading at.
Well, what do you think?
On a daily basis,
Chief. How about 2009?
I'm talking about on a daily, this weekend.
I understand that, but you know what? In 2009, who had advanced knowledge that during the FASB hearing, Congress was going to tell FASB to break the law?
Your favorite Republican lady, the richest one in Congress, walked out of a COVID meeting and sold stock.
Well, I get that. Okay, this is.
As bad as that is, it's nothing compared to. buy the market. I'm gonna sell the market. I'm gonna throw tariffs at it, and then the next day saying, all right, I'm letting go for 30 days. In the last 48 hours, for God's sake.
The corruption. The corruption has gotten to the point. It is so corrosive at this point. And then you have the report that just came out that now essentially all the actual trading that moves the markets in dark pools. So I can't even look at the bid offer stack and have it mean anything.
No, it's nuts.
I can't actually look at what real human beings are, whether or not their intent is to buy or to sell.
It's insanity. Hey, we don't have that much time, and I think we got the other two guys are coming on, but we might want to do a little bit of this on Friday. I've been just doing a little bit of the math here. My friend Dave Murphy, a buddy of mine from Notre Dame, he lives out in he's right near the fire. Matter of fact, the fire people saved his house. The latest fighter of the Hunter fire or whatever it was, they had everything packed. He was out sprinkling his house and all that kind of stuff. And the fire people showed up and poured water all over his houses and flame retardants, and they saved the neighborhood essentially.
They kept it from burning down. Good.
He said these people were absolutely incredible. And he said they had to be tired as hell after how many weeks of this crap. But anyway,
I bet.
He was telling me that. Let me open it up here. I get the right number for what he told me anyway. Pacific Palette. Between Altadena and Palisades, around 15,800 structures, homes, businesses, etc. Our son is law and LAPD says the destruction looks like pictures of Hiroshima. Now, my question is, I'm trying to do a little bit of math here. If it's $100,000 a house, which is way more than that, we're talking $15 billion. So whatever multiplier you want to put on that.
It's a big number.
And I'm looking here in the largest insurers in State Farm, okay, and the other ones, well, State Farm is privately owned. Well, they used to be, I've been with State Farm forever. They used to have they used to be mutual, right? You actually get a check at the end of the year, like $10.
Well, part of it, all right, so State Farm is, a lot of people don't know this, there's actually multiple companies within State Farm. The mutual firm still exists, all right? However, there's also fire and casualty, which is not a mutual company. And where you're placed has a lot to do with your individual property, your loss history, and things like this. But it's like when Sarah first got her driver's license, she was on my ticket because she wasn't an adult. But when she became an adult, I told her, I gave her the title to the car, but I said, you have to go get your own insurance. And oh, by the way, you got to go through all the rigmarole at the DMV and everything else to get the tags and the title and all of this. Welcome to adulthood. You're about to find out why a lot of people hate the government.
Well, but I'm saying, but just, so, we got to dash here, Carl. But then I got Farmers,
Yeah.
CSAA, which looks like they're owned by AAA.
I don't know if they are, but it's a convoluted structure. It's basically
okay. But let me just run down. Then we got Liberty, we got Mercury. I don't know who the hell they are. And then we got Allstate. I looked at Allstate's now between all this and then USAA, and Auto Club Exchange. But I'm looking at these companies. The ones like Allstate, the stock's actually like up or it hasn't gone down at all. I mean, are they not going to? I mean, this is. By the way, if you say $100,000 a house, that's $15 billion. If you want to go to $1 million, you're $15 trillion.
I understand. Yeah,
I don't know how how the hell are we going to cover all this crap? And how these guys are they still in business? I mean, are they not going to pay or what's the deal?
Well, a very large percentage of these losses are uninsured, and the reason is that only the structure, of course, the dirt's not insured, okay? A ridiculous percentage of the valuation out in California is in the dirt, not in the structure. Much higher than most places, all right? I mean, like the house that I have, virtually all of the value is in the structure. All right. I mean, the dirt is maybe worth $30,000 or $40,000. The rest of the value is in the house. Out in California, it's flipped on its head. You could have a $200,000 house sitting on $500,000 worth of land.
But even if that's the number, and we'll go through this more on Friday or sooner. I'm doing remodeling. I always do a remodeling in a place I'm at that's 100 years old. I tell you what, even if the dirt is worth 80% of it, you're not replacing this house for $200,000.
Well, no, but that's the thing, is that almost all of these people are ridiculously underinsured, okay?
And everybody is if it's a total loss. With this inflation?
In most cases, that is, and that's one of the things that's driven so much of the insurance increases in the property area with regards to homeowners, is that with the inflation in value, and especially building materials and such, that's where a lot of the escalations come from. Because if you look at what your bill looks like, what's the replacement value on the whole of the building, and what has happened to that over the last 3 or 4 years? It's skyrocketed.
Well, that's why we had my last statement before. Let's make sure the other guys come in, but it turns a lot of the stuff we're fighting about lately, Carl. I mean, my concern about economics is you learn a lot of this stuff, and now I'm not so sure. In today's crazy world we have, I'm not so sure any of that really applies. And some guy named Cox, he's on CNBC, wrote this really good article about how the Trump administration needs to come up with a way to have two and a quarter million houses built. I mean, that's how far
okay.
But then he made the statement that that should drop the housing prices, and I'm going,
no, why?
I don't think so, because the cost to build a thing is more than most prices, even at the ridiculously high prices they are. Go to Home Depot. Think you can replace that place for even what they're going for now? You're crazy.
Well, never mind the fact that all their wood is crap anyway. So, what percentage of the stuff that you get off their rack is actually usable?
Yeah, that's another issue. Hey, maybe we'll see you back here. I think Kenny and Joel are calling in, but if they don't, we'll talk on Friday.
I'll hang around
because right, we got. I mean, I don't. You know, we're running out. We got so many issues now. Maybe there's only one issue. We're screwing up here somehow. Maybe that's the issue. We'll be right back with Mr. Kenny Pulcheri and Joel O'Connor.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, no big Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. S&P Futures. We have the big stock here moving is Palantir is up $18. It's like 20 or 25%. That's a massive move. So after the close last night, it drove in Nasdaq. I think was up like 175. Well, then China came out and said they've got retaliatory tariffs, and evidently we didn't pull those off. So S&P futures are actually down 275. Nasdaq futures up 16. This is after being up a real lot after the close last night. We were way down in the morning. Came back to you know, we were still down. We'll finish it. Well, I'll say where we were down here, but the we ended up down just a little bit, like five bucks in the S&Ps or whatever. After we were down so much yesterday, it was scary. We were down 110, 150 in the S&P at one point. And then came flying back I'm saying we closed down maybe 10, and then we were way up after the close, after all that started. And we ended up in the S&P down 45, but the futures weren't. Futures had already come back after the close to be maybe down only 10 or 15. Anyway, over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 260, call that flat. FTSE down 10, 0.1%, CAC around up 20, so very not much going on over in Europe. Tariff uncertainty lingers, whatever that means. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei up 278, it's 0.7, the Hang Seng, they're trading up 572, over 20,000, 20,789. Shanghai is still closed for the year of the snake. By the way, Rick, which year are you? Do you even know?
Which year, what you said?
Which year are you? In Chinese year, are you the year of the snake? Or
I have no idea, man.
You should know that.
Yeah, actually, my great-grandpa is from China, actually, so I should know this.
Well, you might want to look that up. We've got oil down $1.56, 71.60, kind of settling down in his low 70s again. Oil has just not been much of a factor except for a couple of days. Brent down 97 cents, 74.99. Natural gas down 14, 321. RBOB up 5 cents, 206. Gold down 12, 28.84, 28.44. Still really high. Maybe pushing towards 2,900. That'd be another record. Silver down 20 cents, 32. Copper up a penny. We've got the foreign exchange, which is going kind of crazy. Europe is back up. It was down to 102 something. Now it's 103.27. The British pound were 124. So dollar actually lost some value as the Chinese tariffs kicked in. The euro slides down a little bit. It's this crazy world. Crypto, which was down 10,000, up 5,000 yesterday, is down 1,800 today, 99,842. Hard to keep track, Ricky. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
6:36 a.m. here in Chicago. 31 degrees right now with a high of 31. Turning cloudy and colder today. Low clouds tonight with a low of 26 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 60 degrees right now with a high of 85. Sunday to partly cloudy and very warm with the temperature tying the record from 1963. Sunday will be clear with a low of 51 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, Iman Kennedy from Monroe's, 10 minutes. We're looking at about 23 minutes. Iman Edens from Lane Cook. Iman Eisenhower from Wolf, 28 minutes. 20 minutes, Iman Dan Ryan from 95th. And lastly, Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 28 minutes. Let's talk about sports. Yesterday, the Senators beat the Predators 5-2. And this Wednesday, February 5, we got Oilers at Blackhawks at 8:30 p.m. Suns lose to Trailblazers yesterday, 2-119 to 121. But today, we got Miami Heat at Chicago Bulls at 7 p.m. Lastly, NFL Pro Bowl was last Sunday. NFC beat AFC 76-63. Super Bowl Sunday is this Sunday, February 9th. Chiefs and Eagles in New Orleans at 5:30 p.m. Back over to you, Chase.
Does anybody even care about the Pro Bowl anymore? It's flag football now, right? Or touch?
I think it is. The website says it's Pro Bowl.
Yeah, it's a Pro Bowl, but they used to play with regular game. They don't anymore. We have Joel?
Yeah, good morning,
Chief. How are you, bud? What's going on?
Well, not too much. Maybe have a tame Tuesday here after a manic Monday.
Manic Friday, manic Monday. Now we're going to have a sovereign wealth fund. The only problem with a sovereign wealth fund, Joel, is aren't you supposed to have some wealth? We're broke.
I don't know. What's the idea for the day, you know? What are we going to do?
Yeah, it's whatever the day is. How can we front run the market today?
Oh, boy. I guess you could say we're in a trading range.
Yeah.
With Friday's action and the follow through on Monday. I think you got some clear lines in the sand, though, I think, for both the Bulls and the Bears. I think that the way that we rebounded off yesterday's low, which was right in the vicinity of last week's low, that's where the Bulls are digging in, and I think they're in control. The Bears really don't have as much a defined area. I will say that that Friday's close, which we did see in the after-hours market on Friday, if if everything's okay and these tariffs aren't going to have any effect on earnings or anything, then I say we get back above Friday's close. But right now, you got a battleground between those two levels.
Well, you do, and you also have we're not sure exactly what's motivation is for people doing this stuff. You lob one out there and the market's way down, and then all of a sudden, you know, if the phones start ringing, hey, you got to get off this stuff. It's not good. We got a president who's watching the market, and get a load of this, the Sovereign Wealth Fund. President Trump signed an executive order that outlines plans for a government foreign wealth fund to serve as an economic development tool and perhaps to buy TikTok. Okay. though the idea of such a fund has been brought up before, they are generally used by smaller nations with vast resources as well as fiscal surpluses. What are we going to put in the fund? Are we going to borrow money to put in the fund to buy TikTok?
I guess so.
And who's going to trade it? Trump and his kids?
Oh, you got me, Chief. You got me.
If you wrote a book like this, Joe, who would buy it? If you outlined what was going on, though.
I don't even think. I guess everybody. I mean, because it would be a book that would never end. I mean, he has, you know, it's the Trump dump or the Trump pump. You know, it's one or the other, and it makes it, you know, for long-term investing, you just got to put the goggles on and, you know, and stick with, you know, your strategies. For shorter-term trading, boy, you know, being dumb, flat dumb and happy at the end of the day is quite the way to be. In overall perspective, though, if you've looked at everything that's gone on with the market and December and now, I mean, basically, we're at all-time highs. I mean, if you know, maybe there's some stocks that are not replicating that because you always have winners and losers. But, you know, overall, he's talking tough, and market's holding up pretty well, in my opinion.
Well, I think it is, too. You know, what's weird about this show is we do, people probably know by now, we do this Protect Index program at PTI for most of the people. We have other stuff we do for everybody. Everybody's unique, right? But basically, the Protected program allows you, If you have put protection, and the market runs all the way down, well, you know, you got to deepen the money put. You don't really want that, right? So you'll roll that to a closer to the money put. So what you're essentially doing is getting a little longer when the market's down, and getting a little shorter when the market's up. You know, is really what you're doing. So you're predisposed to buy low and sell high. Now, if you're just naked and you see the market way down, to run in and just like buy spoos or something is really tough. You know, you don't know if you're catching the bottom or you're catching the falling knife, right? But if you're protected and you actually have something on the other side, in the last 5 months since the market's been goofy like this, I don't think we've made a bad trade. In the sense that every time it's down and it looks like it's going to hell, we say, oh no, let's do our role, let's do what we're supposed to do. And sure enough, it comes back the other way. But I don't think I would ever, if I was just naked, just run out there and like buy calls or sell puts or buy spoos or something. But if you're set up in such a way, it's like if you buy the option straddle and you trade the futures against it, it's going to be too technical. As long as you're protected one way or the other, if on the way up you sell the futures but you're long the calls, or the other way you buy the futures but you're long the puts, if you protect most of the time, I don't think over the whole years I've been in the business that your time decay would basically eat up your profits. I think in the last couple of years, going back, now not going forward, we could have done real well doing that. I think we would have made more money scalping than we would have lost on the time decay. What do you think of that?
I agree. I mean, the time decay, especially going into earnings or big events, I mean, you know, it's the thing of the strategy that you're talking about is if something sits still, you still win because of the time decay. So it's something that I've looked at in, you know, some of my, you know, more concentrated holdings, and you know, a lot of times it, you know, it still goes up, it goes up, it goes up, and you know, it's not as worth it. But I think now the kind of environment that you are in right now, I think that strategy is more prudent than it ever was.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think for 90% of my time in the business, you'll, let's say the S&P's now, the spiders are at 598, or they're up 55 cents here in the pre-market. I don't think that you could buy the 598 straddle for Friday or 2 weeks from now and now you're paying whatever, $10. So we have to make more than $10 scalping the spools just to break even, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think most of the time we could have done that on a regular basis, and we'd be losing. I think in the last year or so, again, the last year, not the next year, I think we could have done really well, and I don't know when, any other time we could have done that.
No, and I just think this is what you're going to be seeing for the, you know, this kind of market action for in the next 4 years, and who knows beyond that. I think you have heightened volatility, which is also good for selling options. If you're buying some and you're selling some, at least, you know, doing spreads or, you know, struggle like a straddle or a straggle, you're kind of buying both ends. So you're going to need that big move. But there's really something to be said, and that, you know, option makers didn't, you know, get where they are by, you know, by giving an or not a risk. They hedge off the risk that they have. So. I think it's definitely an important strategy that if you're not doing it on your larger positions or overall market, I think this is an excellent time to do it.
Well, yeah, because the if you look at the volatility, though, in the future, 30 years from now, if we're still doing the show, you and I, we're going to look back on these 2 days and say, what volatility? Close to close was hardly anything, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. And then, a lot of the movements overnight. So you got to be protected overnight. And then, boy, a lot of the day action, I mean, is just mind boggling. You know, some of the moves that happened just on nothing, just on a tweet. So a lot of factors to consider. But you might dampen at points, dampen your overall returns. Putting yourself in a position where you either can make money in a down market or not lose as much. I mean, that's prudent investing, and along with rotation.
We've had puts in the queues in the last week that were in the same day, both $10 in the money and $10 out of the money. I mean, we went, how many years did we go? You were, I think you were on the show. Were you on the show during the last part of the Obama administration where we went how many months without a 1% move? We can't go 3 hours now without a 1% move.
Yeah, I know. I know, especially with the economic data and the tweets and everything coming out. But good talk on definitely ways to to mitigate some risk. I'll just reiterate for investors that port and lows put in last week and this week, a very important area basis, the S&P futures 59.50, and Friday's close, I mean, that's only 40 handles away, I mean, which is nothing. So we got some big earnings reports. Google, still the Mag 7 yet to report. But let's see if we can just calm down here a little bit and make it to next Monday. That's what I'm hoping for. So that's all I got for today, Chief.
Whoa, one more? Who do you like Sunday? Come on, we're Stacks and Jacks.
Who do I like Sunday? Well, my sister's a huge Eagles fan, so I'm kind of kind of anti Mahomes because I don't want them to be, talking about him being as good as Brady. So I guess I'll throw my lot with the Eagles, but I'm not putting any pennies on it. Won't be too disappointed if KC wins because theoretically that's better for the market.
There you go, Theo. That's interesting. Well, I'll roll with you on that one. That team is exceptionally good. So is the Eagles. It's gonna be a good game, I think. Which you don't normally get. But anyway, S&P futures up 5. NASDAQ futures up 61. Do we have Mr. Kenny?
Yes, we do.
Kenny, I understand that you're going to be trading the sovereign wealth fund.
Yeah. Yes. Who did that get out already? Who published that, by the way?
Can we get a little something, a little heads up?
Absolutely. That was supposed to be a secret. How'd that get out so fast?
I mean, I heard that yesterday. I'm going, wait a minute. Aren't you supposed to have a surplus so you can have a sovereign wealth fund?
Yeah. Well, yes, or maybe you have to start to create one, right? You create a sovereign wealth. You know, I'm mixed on it. On the one hand, I think it's a good idea. On the other hand, I'm seeing all kinds of tweets talking about it's the worst idea you can have. Then the government takes positions in industries, and you know that then you lose control, and the markets aren't free anymore, and blah blah blah, all that stuff. So I'm not sure how I feel about the announcement. You know, my first reaction was, wow, that's a great idea. I'm surprised we haven't had one already, but maybe it's not such a great idea.
Well, you know why we haven't had one? We don't have any money.
Well, that is part of the problem. That is part of the problem. But over the weekend, you know, I saw, who was it? It's Norway that has that massive, massive sovereign wealth fund.
Because they run surpluses.
$1.6 trillion in a sovereign wealth fund or something that they then use to turn around and make life better for their citizens, right? So I sit there and scratch my head and go, now how come we can't do that? Because we spend too much money, we give too much away to people who don't care, and Congress doesn't know how to control themselves.
They're giving the people what they want, you know?
Right.
I mean, I did some work for a lady who was running for treasurer in Illinois. If the state has extra money, which at times of the year they do actually, depending on when they have to pay people and so forth and contracts. But they're very restricted. They can only invest in, well, let's put it this way. If you're Orange County and who are the guys in Texas, Harris County, if those guys manage to go off the reservation and lose a lot of money. But virtually every other state, the only thing you can invest in is U.S. bonds or bills or whatever. So whether you did a good job or bad job is where you played the yield curve that year, and you either screwed up or did well for like 0.2%, something.
But if you put a national sovereign wealth fund, is that going to be the same thing? You're going to allow?
What I'm saying is that this is time was when the state has extra cash. But right. If you have, so if we ran a surplus for how many years in paid down our $33 trillion thing, and Kenny, we got about as much chance of that as you and I going out with Taylor Swift tonight. The chance of that, and all of a sudden we got $4 trillion left. Guys like you would be sitting around saying, okay, what does the government do with $4 trillion? We can invest in states. We got to put it someplace. So then the question, whether you want to call it a sovereign wealth fund or something, you need to do something with the extra cash. But we don't have any. we're gonna borrow money to let Trump trade it?
Money to create the sovereign wealth fund.
We're going to borrow money to create a wealth fund. That's laughable, isn't it?
It is laughable because look, we're both laughing about it, right?
Yeah. Wait, I'm gonna go out and borrow money on my Visa card and say it's my wealth, it's my stock fund. I'm like, I guess that's interesting, but I wouldn't call it wealth. I'd call it my borrowed fund or something.
Yeah. But he, you know, it's funny because he signed that executive order saying we're going to launch this fund, but then never really talked about how they plan on funding it. Right? Are they going to plan on funding it with the money they save from Doge? Or from USAID?
Well, you know,
every time you turn around.
Well, you're not going to, if Congress said this group could spend $1 billion on something, yeah. And somebody decides they're going to save $100 million of the billion, which probably actually could happen in a lot of cases. Yeah. I don't know that the hundred since you're in a hole everywhere else. I don't think the hundred billion should or whatever it is, the billion should just go back to where it came from.
Well, I agree with you, right? It should go back to where it came from. But whatever, there's too many other problems in the world that you and
I... Oh, I know. What do you make of... I was mentioning to Joel that if you have a position now to where you're protected and you can actually, when the market goes flying down, become a little bit of a buyer and not just be basically, you know, put your head in the guillotine... Those trades have been very good. I mean, because you're buying when you're down and you're selling when you're up. Every adjustment we've made in the last 5 weeks has been a good one. I mean, but we're not buying 10 spoos for anybody. We don't do anything like that. But it's, every trade has been a good one when you're essentially buying low and selling high. If you're protected and covered, it's been the very basic trades have worked out okay.
100%. I got to tell you though, I was a little bit confused yesterday morning when you got up and you saw all this panic. And I'm sitting there going, what didn't people understand about I'm going to raise tariffs on Europe and China and Mexico and Canada that he's been saying for 7 months, all during the campaign and all that. He said it at the inauguration. He said it after the inauguration. Yet the market seemed to completely avoid it, not even pay attention to it. But then yesterday it had a nervous breakdown yesterday morning, which was, in my mind, it was kind of stupid, right? It made no sense to me.
Well, when we talk about it, it seems, I'll make a political statement. The people that are doing this, seemingly, and I'm, you know, I guess they must have somebody there who understands some of this stuff. They lob out this salvo, but with such little detail. You honestly don't know who's being hurt and who's not being hurt, and you don't know the details. You know people are going to be let out of it. You don't know who the hell is going to be let out of it or not, and what the exceptions are going to be. I think it's amazingly disconcerting, and I think it's really bad government. I really do. I mean, if we decided, I mean, it's so weird to me. If I was going to give a economics class, if I could still do that, about tariffs, I'd start out with maybe a car coming in from Germany. Okay, well, now those people have plants here, so it's not anywhere near as if a Mercedes are only made in Germany and you put a tariff on a Mercedes. Okay, you could go through the machinations on the blackboard, showing my age, where, okay, you put a $10,000 tariff on the Mercedes.
Yeah.
So now the Mercedes might say, well, if it's $10,000 more, we're not competitive at all. We're going to eat $4,000 of it.
All right.
So that cuts your tariff down a little bit. Now, it gets here. Now, its competitor, say, is Cadillac. Say it's the only competitor. Cadillac's going to say, they might actually say, wow, since Mercedes is now more money, we might raise our prices.
Right.
So even to figure out something simple like that, where it's all going to land, you don't really know. But now, but the weird part about the Canadian thing or Mexican thing, there is no Pulcari Mobile in Canada. It's our own companies.
Right.
Which, now you sit there and go, okay, well, we're sending a transmission to Toronto, where I think they make, I think they make Chevy pickups up there, something like that.
Yeah.
We're sending a transmission up there. Okay, so Canada is going to put a 25% tariff on the transmission coming over. Now, if they send the truck back here, we're going to put a 25% tariff on the, do we even know what we're doing here? I mean, are we going to say, no, that's not going to happen? I mean, it is so undefined that it makes it very difficult to even figure out how you trade GM, for God's sake.
Well, you know, that's the argument. Like in Mexico, there are so many things that go back and forth before the product apparently is completed. So every time something comes back, it's got a tariff. Then it goes back. Then it comes back and gets a tariff again. Then it goes back. Then it comes back a third time. When it's complete, it's got another tariff.
I mean, and there is no Mexico Mobile that you're trying to keep out of here. They're Fords and Chevys.
Right. But I think what he's trying to do is he's trying to get Ford and Chevy to bring the manufacturing back to Detroit, right?
Maybe. Maybe.
None of this will happen.
Well, maybe that's what you want him to do. I mean, there's so much involved in some of this, Kenny. I mean, Carl always talks about the China tariff, for instance. Now, you could make an argument. I don't know which side or you and I would fall on this, but you could make an argument for people to send stuff, maybe a little bit to Mexico, but clearly to China. What are we really doing? We're offshoring child labor and pollution. So you could say to on a tariff, well, if you're gonna pay people 50 cents an hour that are 12 years old to put this together, that's not competing properly. You know, by the way, just because you want to pollute your rivers and we don't ours, that's a different price. We're going to put a 30% tariff just to make sure that you don't do that, or unless you stop doing it or something.
Right.
So, I mean, there's reasons for all this stuff, but I don't know what it... But just the idea that we're punishing them for something. I mean, yesterday I did something really stupid, Kenny. I don't know if you want to hear this. Close your ears if you don't listen to it. I mean, all of a sudden now, we're all over fentanyl and these drugs that are coming in here killing people.
Yep.
Which, by the way, I don't think you and I want anybody being killed by any of this stuff.
Right.
In January of 2000, I looked at these numbers, Kenny, I was appalled. January 2017, when the Trumper took office the first time, how many overdose deaths do you think we had a month? Pick a number.
I don't know, but obviously you know.
65,000.
Okay.
I would have said like 10.
Okay, and what did we have?
Now, when he left, the number was up to 95.
95,000.
And now, in July of 2024, which is the last one now, this Biden, I don't think he did much, but now we're down to like 90 after being over 100. So it's not, the guy's whole first term, seemingly, I didn't hear a peep out of them about it. Now, all of a sudden, this is the reason why we got to shut Canada down. I mean, do I want people dying over here? But these numbers, God, Kenny, I can't believe there's this many people dying every month. Can you?
Well, no, I can't. That seems like an awfully high number. Although, you know, every time you see those stories, either in the news or on the internet or whatever, you know, your heart breaks because, you know, whoever these kids, these people that, you know, first of all, they're buying these drugs in the street anyway. They don't even know what they're buying. And then they end up dying. But it's a sad statement. So somebody's really got to do something about it. The previous administration did nothing. They just left the borders wide open and didn't.
Well, actually, the numbers didn't go up. They came down a little bit.
The numbers went up from Trump 65 to 95.
No. When Trump left, they were 95.
Oh, when he left, they were 95.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you said that when Biden was there.
No. Biden didn't do anything. They're like 91 now.
Right, okay. But they were up a little bit when Biden, and then they came back in a little bit, right? They're still up. But yeah, you're right. But, you know, I think the idea that it got so, the last couple of years between the immigration and the, you know, the illegal immigration, and then they throw the fentanyl in, that just created this whole movement in this country. People were just tired of it, right? Clearly, because they voted the other side out, completely out.
Well, and I don't want fentanyl to anybody. I see the homeless clams. So I used to watch, I told you this, the guy over here, where you'd show up with the, he'd ride down the expressway the wrong way on a bicycle. He'd hop up on the thing. He's selling over their drugs. If I could, but you know, you got your nose to the world a little bit. If I don't know what this stuff goes for, and I don't want it coming from China and all these other places, but if somebody sells, let's say a fentanyl hit, for lack of a better term, costs $100.
Yeah.
How much of the 100 do you think are being made by people in this country? I'm going to guess 80. 50, somewhere in there. I mean,
I would say it's 50. I would say it's 50 because I think cartels are getting a big chunk of it, right?
You think they are? I mean, I'd be surprised if they're that far up the chain. I'm going to say everybody who gets it doubles it.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, but I'm saying that if everybody in this country can't be innocent. I mean, granted, you want to find the source, but we did crack cocaine. The source was here, right? I never saw anybody getting busted for that, did you?
No, I agree. I agree that there's not people in this country that are not guilty. Of course they are, right? Because they partnered up with wherever it's coming in from, whether it's coming in from Mexico, China, whatever. They partnered up and they're helping it. They're helping it along the way. So you have to, you should go after them as well. But I think you want to stop it at first at the borders, right? Kind of neuter the cartels, if that's even possible. And prevent it from where it's. I don't know where it's really coming from in Canada. Like, what part of the border is it? The whole northern border across the.
They said I read that the a whole bunch is coming from Mexico, but they said they only found 43 pounds in Canada. Now, 43 pounds is a lot, but it's not like hundreds of pounds like coming out of Mexico.
Right.
But I mean, how do you even? My brother, you ever go canoeing up in Quetico? The boundary. You ever go canoeing up in the boundary waters?
No.
You actually go through customs in a canoe.
Oh, really?
my brother goes, geez, how much is coming in on those canoes? But you know what? Nobody ever know, would they? I mean, good. You could hide 43 pounds in a canoe pretty easy. Nobody ever know. Just saying. Yeah. I'm not saying that's what people are doing, but I mean, how many border crossings are there in Canada that are real crossings? There can't be very many.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, I don't think so, but what do I know?
All across northern Montana, I know the cows can walk back and forth, but there's even a road?
No, there's probably no road, but they just, I mean, I'm assuming it's land to land, so you just walk right across the border.
Yeah, I mean, we were in one of my clients, who's long dead, but had three places on the Bay of the Islands up in I think it's Ontario. God, Ken, these things were so gorgeous, it was scary up in Northern Lake Ontario. He actually built big houses out on these islands. And he bought the first one from the Crown. They sold it from the, he bought it from the Crown, for God's sake. You're driving down his road on northern, at the top of Lake Huron, and you make a right turn, and you get down to Manitoulin Bay and stuff. It's an interesting spot. And there's a lot of Native Americans up there and everything, and they're always fighting with those guys. But his son says to me, if you made a left turn instead of right, you could go all the way to the Bering Sea, and all you're going to have is mosquitoes and moose. There's nothing left of the road. Everything's just right.
Right.
I mean, it's pretty scary. So what are right now, everybody's hanging out. What's going on with Apple? It's going down every day. What's the deal with that?
You know what? It's very interesting to me because they came out with a great report. They beat on every metric they had. Yeah, China sales were down, but they were down less than what the analysts were estimating, right? So in my mind, that was a beat. They made $124 billion in 3 months. It's crazy to me that they're just selling Apple like that. I think you know, as they sell off Apple, I think for a long-term investor, I think you got to buy it. I think you got to buy it. It's Apple. I think you just got to buy it. I'm not really sure why they continue to sell it. You know, is money coming out of some of these tech names that have, you know, performed well and moving into either other parts of the tech space, or is it broadening out, moving into, you know, the other sectors, utilities, or healthcare? Healthcare is actually doing fairly well this year.
It did horrible. It was like unchanged last year.
It was unchanged last year, right? It was underperformer last year. But I think it's going to lift its head this year, and you do see. I think it's up 3 or 4% so far this year.
What do you make of when people come out with the thing? I don't know. It doesn't really matter. What I think, but I'm seeing more and more of the earnings reports that are good ones. Even Apple came out and said, "Well, the phones things wasn't so hot, but oh, by the way, we're raising our prices and doing better on the service." Seems like everybody's got good stuff now. It's a raise price thing,
and right?
Which is great for one place, but if everybody's doing it collectively, I don't know if there's an end game to that.
Well, the end game is, this is where I keep saying I think we're going to see inflation rear its ugly head again, right? Because they're all raising their prices. Well, what does that mean? That means inflation's coming back. So I also think that means the Fed does nothing. No matter how much Donald Trump stamps his feet saying he demands lower rates, he can demand all he wants, but the Fed is the Fed. The Fed needs to do what it needs to do, and that's not necessarily, you know, do what the president wants to do, whether it's Trump or Biden or whoever, right? They need to remain independent, which is why I don't think we're getting any rate cuts this year.
Why, Kenny, this is a 45-year phenomenon, but when I first started on the floor and when I was doing all the studying in Chicago, we had all that inflation and all that stuff, the truth, I think, now, well, it's been a long time and nobody believes it, but the truth is that the Fed can control the money in the pool essentially overnight or over a week or two. Unless they're willing to balloon their balance sheet up to $9 trillion again and buy everything out there, where they essentially overrun the market, the Fed doesn't control long-term rates, but everybody now believes that they do. They don't.
No, they don't control long-term rates, right? Like 30-year rates, they don't do that. The market really controls that, right? The Fed is much more in the shorter duration space, right? The 10-year and below space, where they can have more control over kind of what rates in that category do, right?
But they don't. I don't think Canada even control to a certain extent. Back in 80, they couldn't control the short term rates because everybody thought, as long as people thought the inflation was going to be 12%, they're going to be 12 plus something. They could control the 12 plus one or two, but it still was going to be 12 to start out with, right?
100%.
So, I mean, if this inflation comes back and someday people either stop believing the CPI or the CPI straightens out, in my opinion, I could see them with 8% long-term rates if they don't do the job right, and they're not going to be able to do anything about it.
Yeah, no, and I agree with you. I think it's very possible. I'm not sure they're going to 8%, but I think if you see rates, I think if you see the 10-year somewhere between 5 and 6%, I think that's very possible.
I was one part back in my, it's never going to leave my mind, Kenny, is the year that Rabbit and I got the bridge loan on the condo we were remodeling, and we started at 8.5, and 6 months later we were at 12.5.
Yeah.
Once you get to the high end, and they all of a sudden panic, they move fast.
Yeah, they move very fast. Yeah, they move much faster on the way up than they do on the way down.
And I hope we never see that again, but actually I went back. I said, I can't be right on that. And I went back, whenever the hell it was. Was it 1980 or something? Or 1979? I went right back, and there it was, right on the chart.
Yeah, right there, because that's when rates shot up to 20%.
Yeah, but it was so fast. It was so fast. Yeah. You know, idea that, no matter how bad we screw up, we can't go past 5.5. Yeah, you can.
Yeah, you can, right.
What do you think about...
But it happened the same way, you know, you can't go lower than 3. We were at 0 for 15 years. That wasn't normal either.
What do you make of one thing we talk about, the China, and you might know anecdotally, but you know Dan was in that business, Dan Janitas. Does anybody have their thumb on the pulse of what is actually happening out of China in terms of all the loans that went over there? Are they non-performing? Are they at least getting some interest? Do you have any idea? What's the drain like out of that?
I do not know. I bet you Dan would know that, though. I don't know.
I mean, you were on CNBC for a long time, and well, now it's AI all day long. For a little bit before that, it was cloud.
Right.
But 8 years ago, it was China. I mean, if you weren't in China or you weren't talking about it, you didn't get on the air. I mean, there's got to be huge money that's there. Is it just dead?
Well, it's interesting. I can't speak to it. Honestly, I cannot. But I think you got to ask Dan Janitas because I think he probably has a handle on it.
All right, bud. Well, hey, thanks. You sound good. Any traveling this week?
I am traveling. Yes, I'm actually traveling on Sunday, and I got to go back to New York. So I'll be there Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday next week.
Okay, next week, not President's Week. So you're next week. Where are you Super Bowling in New York?
I'm going to Super Bowl in New York, and I'm leaving actually Sunday night. So I'm leaving halfway through the Super Bowl.
All right. Who do you like?
Eagles.
What are you betting on the if the KC wins? Will he pop the question on the field after the game?
Oh, please. So I saw somebody say the other day, I think it was Jimmy Urio. He said if that happens, he's stop watching football for seasons. He said I just don't want to see that happen. I don't know, but that seems to be the rumor, right? That's what he's going to do.
You know, I think Hal's listening, but you know that bet is illegal in Illinois.
Which bet? The bet that he's going to bet again?
We state of Illinois, passed a law 3, 4, 5 months ago. You can't have any prop betting on sports that can be determined by one guy. Or okay. You can't make a bet on whether the first play of the game will be a pass or a run.
Right.
You can't bet on whether a field goal is going to be good or not. There's like a list of about 8 of them, and I guess it kind of makes sense. You can't bet on if somebody's going to get hurt because a guy could feign injury. If it can be determined by one person, you can't bet on it. Now, obviously, whether you propose or not is determined by one person, right?
That's right. Yeah. So you can't even bet on it. But if you go to a neighboring state, you can bet on.
Oh yeah, you can go wherever you want. But evidently, right. It's if you bet $100 and he proposes, I think you win like $7,000 or something.
Yeah.
What if she says no? Is that another bet?
Is there a bet on that?
Probably is someplace.
Yeah.
All right, buddy. Take care of yourself. S&P futures. Up 2, NASDAQ futures up 35. We were way up more than that. You want to give us like a half a second break, then we'll get back to hell?
Sure.
All right. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing, address some growing concentration issues, maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you'll find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side. Protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at tom@ptisecurities.com.
Jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Lone Wolf Base Action Jacks. I'm Tom Al. Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 75 cents. The NASDAQ Futures up 33. Again, we were way up last night after the tariffs after the close yesterday. The tariffs on Mexico were delayed a month. And then all of a sudden we came out with the China putting tariffs on us, and then we went back down again. So this is kind of nuts. And Harold is going to tell us all about it. Professor, how are you?
Is anybody shocked that the tariffs were actually not put in place? My mother-in-law, I talked to her on Sunday night, and she went off she filibustered on this for like 30 minutes. We have these really interesting conversations.
Oh, I can only imagine.
She's a Haitian woman from, she's a fiery, he's fiery. I'm from Idaho. I'm libertarian. She's definitely, you know, she's a conservative Democrat. She's a lot like you, Tom. She still thinks the Democrat Party is the party of JFK, and it's not. I think.
Well, if they ever want to win again, they better get back there.
Well, we saw that this weekend with them trying to pick leadership, right?
Yeah, they haven't learned a thing.
They didn't learn anything. I mean, they're still doing the same stuff, and they picked two white guys.
I'm willing to go on a limb and say that Trump didn't win. They lost.
You know, that might be the case. You know, the funny thing about Trump is the most controversial picks he has for his cabinet, JFK, Tulsi Gabbard. I'm not sure about Cash Patel, but Cash Patel, and even himself, and Robert Kennedy Jr.'s running mate, Sheehan. They're all former Democrats. What does that tell you about the Democrat Party?
I don't get what happened to that group. I still, some of my political heroes are my love in that group. Badley Stevenson, Paul Simon, those kinds
of
people.
Well, you know, the best president, in my opinion, is the Libertarian Democrat back in the 1800s. For some reason, I must be getting old because I forget his name. And then my other favorite presidents are Calvin Coolidge. I think those guys did great. Every president from Calvin Coolidge on, in my opinion, have been train wrecks. And, you know, a lot of people think Teddy Roosevelt is a great president. I don't agree with him at all. The guy was a nut job. He wanted to invade Canada.
After all the people were in there, that guy was disgusting. All he did was kill stuff.
I mean, Teddy Roosevelt wanted to invade Canada and annex it as our 51st. Well, not at the time. It wasn't 51st state, but he wanted to annex Canada in the 60s or 70s. And he's the reason why we have what the right calls the deep state, because it was his efforts that created this unfireable federal bureaucracy. It was his efforts that he started this effort to shield these federal workers from the political process. And before that, a Republican would fire all the Democrats and replace them with Republicans, and then the Democrats would return the favor, you know, 4 years later. Because of Teddy Roosevelt's efforts, in order to tilt the federal government in your favor as a new Republican or a new Democrat, you had to hire new people. And that's how we have this unaccountable administrative state that really runs.
Why a lot of this stuff is, like we were talking earlier in the show regarding a lot of it is the people you have. If people believe in the system, there's an awful lot of people that work for the government that have, you know, service to the government as their life. Not everybody is doing.
I'm not saying everybody. But before the civil service laws were passed, which was, you know, spirited by Teddy Roosevelt, before that, government didn't really intervene in our lives. I mean, they taxed imports for the most part, right? The regulatory state was tiny. And so if a president replaces all the civil servants that are Democrats with Republicans, and then his predecessor or her predecessor, the person that follows him that gets elected next time is a Democrat, and they replace all the Republicans in the federal bureaucracy with Democrats, does it really affect their lives? Not when the government was as small as it was. Today, it makes a big difference. And I would argue, if you look at just the political makeup of the state capitals of D.C., I would make the argument that that probably reflects the tilt in government.
I don't know that it there's a lot of ways to look at this, Hal. And I, as you know, my concern with government is it's was it Catch 22 or what was the one where was it Department of Redundancy Department?
In a movie?
No, was it a book or the governmental department they're always looking at was the Department of Redundancy Department.
Well, you know, that's the United States Navy. I mean, they preach redundancy, right?
Well, but
you want redundancy in a nuclear power plant. Don't get me wrong.
Well, but what I'm saying is my concern is not necessarily with people showing up and doing nothing, which seems to be the accusation. And yeah. You know, and that's just, as you know, my concern with this particular group of people in office is that you can either appeal to somebody's ego or their id, according to Freud, right? And these guys appeal to the id, and that's not my style. It just never will be. You know, you can say, because there was a, like I said, a saloon that I went to in South Bend. I say this all the time. On the wall was posters. Always remember that everybody else in the world is paid way too much for their job and don't work hard enough, or something along those lines. So anybody paid more than you is paid too much, or something like that.
Oh, I don't agree with that at all.
Well, you don't, but I'm saying...
I have colleagues that make more money than me, because
that's what makes you a regular person, man. I'm saying people, everybody, if you were out to a group of people, there's groups you could find. Everybody in Washington's a bleep up. Nobody works. They're all a bunch of assholes. Yeah. There'd be people that agree with that. Now, I, on the other hand, would say, okay, this group actually that Trump's looking at, this consumer something department, when they put that thing together, I'm like, wait a minute. All the stuff these people are supposed to do, other departments are already supposed to do. So I think you have a massive amounts of duplication. I mean, Mike Murphy, our guest on the show, who's the Army retiree and good friend of mine. What do you say? There's Army intelligence, Naval intelligence, NSA, CIA, FBI. I mean, to me, it's not individual people not doing anything. I think it's them getting their own way because there's too many people doing the same thing.
Yeah,
which is more of an efficiency thing than it is individually. You guys are a bunch of slackoffs. I wouldn't go that way, but other people do. I mean, it's just
here's the ironic thing: the government has these laws called con laws, and these con laws can be used by incumbent firms, namely hospitals, to issue a competitor's veto against an entrepreneur that wants to open up a competing hospital nearby, and their argument is. It represents duplicative services. That's the ironic thing, right? And you see
gas stations do that too, don't they? It's a duplicate service, right?
You can you imagine Walmart or McDonald's issuing a competitor's veto against like Lowe's grocery store or
Burger King? They sort of can if the other person needs zoning and they won't ever give it to them.
Yeah, I mean, that happens in small towns.
Yeah.
I was talking to a person, a student, at an event we had last week. And we got on the topic of, you know, privilege. And I was like, well, you know, when you're from a Western rural community, you have the rich, the guy that owns, you know, two large businesses in the town. The person has the money to become the mayor. He essentially pays the police. And then you have everybody else. And that community is pretty much all white. All my friends lived at poverty levels. But we didn't know because we were all in the same boat. We were all living at poverty. We had four pairs of pants and five shirts.
But as soon as you had a TV or traveled a little bit, then you knew.
Yeah. We each had a TV with a dial, and we had an antenna that was 50 feet long. They had to rotate to pick up the NBC channel because it was, you know, 20 miles from the ABC channel. So all my friends grew up really poor, and there was one guy that kind of ran the town, and he had the law behind him. His son was the quarterback. His son went to college. Everybody else, you know, nobody else was expected to go to college. And that was the town I grew up in. What I'm saying here is, you know, these incumbent firms, these large incumbent firms that have political power, they have the ability to lobby, they create these protections from themselves using the government. And it's not corporate capture. That suggests that the corporations are the problem. The corporations are buying, these incumbent firms that are purchasing these protections from government, well, you know what? They're on the buying side. They're on the demand side of the exchange. But there is a supplier, and that is the elected politician. And that, and this is another reason why I don't want, and I've been tweeting about this, I don't want Trump starting a sovereign wealth fund.
Well, we don't have any wealth. How do you start a wealth fund with no wealth?
Yeah, exactly. But that means the government's going to be an investor, a player, a quarterback, a coach, and the referee.
He wants his kids to run it, and everybody else's buddies front run the thing.
I don't know who's going to have run it, but I don't want the state. And you know, they're not being very long run focused, because what happens to that sovereign wealth fund when Democrats retake the White House in 4 years?
That's why it's insane. Well, as I was talking to Kenny, if we actually had a surplus, you'd have to figure out, whatever you'd call it, what are we going to do with our surplus? We'd have to have that conversation, right? But we don't have one.
Yeah, we don't. Well, we're far from it, right? You know, the funny thing is, I was looking up TARP, and I was like, I looked up the definition of sovereign wealth fund. If you think about it, TARP under Bush and Obama, that was a temporary sovereign wealth fund because it owned stocks and securities in banks and General Motors and Chrysler. It took over GMAC, which I think became Ally Bank. So we've had, you know, I guess what you call sovereign wealth funds in the past, but the government shouldn't be the referee, the quarterback, and the coach.
Why do you think these people are there?
What people? Which one?
The people we have in government now. They're there to enrich themselves.
Oh yeah. Well, you know,
we're Tuesday morning. In the last 72 hours, going back to Thursday night, I've never seen as much front-running coming out of the executive branch that I've seen this time.
Well, you know, but it's everywhere, though.
What do you mean everywhere?
It's not just Democrats. It's not Republicans, it's Democrats.
This is a new level. There's going to be a tariff. We're down 90 bazillion points. Wait a minute. I'll tell a few people around me that I'm going to push it off a month.
I agree with Kenny on this. I think what happened was the media wants clicks. They want eyeballs on their shows. So they, you know, Trump says, I'm going to oppose a tariff. He said it for like a year on the campaign trail. That's not a surprise. And if you're paying attention to Trump, what did I say yesterday? Trump leverages crazy. That's what Trump does. He leverages crazy to get the policies that he thinks his voters want. So, you know, you're not going to out-populist that guy. That guy is probably the greatest populist in the history of politics. And Chuck Schumer tries to out-populist him.
I know, but there's always information that is out there that you don't get, right? That's why markets are markets. And we used to have a situation, which we could probably never do again because of the, in open outcry system, you almost didn't worry about it because you knew the guy you were trading with, and if he front ran the thing 10 times in a row, you didn't trade with him, or you punched him, one or the other. But now everything's electronic. You're right. He's been talking tariffs, and that's part of his playbook. It's not the same.
I didn't believe one second those tariffs are going into effect. Okay. My mother-in-law was telling me that they were in effect. I go, Mom, they don't.
Well, then if that's really day. You know, hell, I love you, man. But if that's really the truth, you should have made a fortune. Because when we were down 110 spoo points or 150 the other night, you should have been a buyer.
Well, Tom, it's one thing two days later
to say, I knew he was going to back off. It's quite another to stick your appendage in there and do something.
Well, right? I would have done that, but I was at my daughter's basketball game last night.
If I didn't forget my phone in the car, I'd have been long 200 spoos. I'm saying.
Well, you know, if people followed me on Twitter, they would have gotten this advice, and they could have made all that.
But all of a sudden, it's down 80, it's down 100, it's down 110, it's down 150. You don't know any of the detail on this stuff. Nobody does. How do you dive into that abyss in the middle of the night? That 2 days later he's going to call it off. He might call it off. It might be down 300 before he calls it off.
Well, I think what happened here is, Trudeau and the president of Mexico, they're the ones that kind of called it off, because I think they've been watching CNBC and Fox Business Network. They've been listening to Howard Lutnick on those shows say, well, Trump just uses these tariffs to get the policies that he wants.
He also grades himself by the stock market. He also grades himself by the stock market.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
But if you listen to Howard Lutnick, who is going to be the Commerce Secretary, he's been telling people for, 2 months that Trump's going to use the tariffs to get the policies adopted he wants in these countries.
But is he just going to declare victory?
Yeah. Well, the president of Mexico and the Canadian Prime Minister Trudeau, they called his bluff. But the thing about Trump is he's crazy enough to do it. And he countered their bluff while he was on the golf course. Mm-hmm. Being on the golf course Sunday while this was going on is part of his thing. It's part of the crazy. He leveraged even more crazy by being on the golf course, right? Because he's acting like it's not a big deal.
Yeah, you know, right? Is somebody who is a brilliant economist, and you're in your world, which I'm jealous to be in, actually, because I would like to go back and learn more like you do. But in my world, somebody lobbing out bombs that people obviously are trading on before he lobs it on is not something I like to see. All the stuff moved before you and I heard about the move. The market's already moved.
If people are trading on that insider information, they should be prosecuted.
Well, they're not going to be.
It's against the law.
They're not going to be.
Yeah. You know, I'm convinced, Tom, that the SEC's job is to cover up the people who trade, the friends who trade on this inside information. Do we really know who is shorting the market?
What do you think under this guy's mentality? What do you think would happen if the SEC demanded who knew about his tariff announcement an hour before? What do you think? What do you think he'd fire all those guys?
Well, I'm not saying it happened. I'm just saying I think it was predictable, based on what.
But
Trump
when
does
as my mother used to say. Which is real good bridge, player. Which
you say? He leverages crazy on Twitter. He leverages crazy.
I know, but I'm saying this. Hell, this is real money. You know,
if you trade, I know it's real money.
We're talking about. I mean, the whole. You see the thing what happened with Bitcoin yesterday? That was down $10,000, and then the rumor came out that they were going to buy it in the sovereign wealth fund. It went up $15,000.
You know. But the funny thing is that's not the first time I've heard about him wanting to buy Bitcoin via the federal government. It's not the first time I heard about him wanting to buy TikTok with the federal government. I've been hearing those stories for over the course of the last month.
The part,
I mean, to me, it was not news.
The part that I could come into your school and I could teach one piece. I could teach the trading aspects of this. Is if other people, if IBM's trading whatever, 261, it's up again today. If all of a sudden there's some news out there, there's people that are in the business of making markets in IBM, okay, that actually make a two-sided market. Now, it's a tough thing to do these days, but they're going to be, we're 261, they're going to be 260.90 bid at 261.10, okay, so... And nothing much going on. The idea is to pick yourself a price. That's how you make a market. You get a price. All these people are trying to, they think it's going up. Another guy thinks it goes down. You're supposed to pick a price, which when a phone rings, showing my age, half the people are buying and half the people are selling. So you make your 10 cents or 5 cents or whatever it is, back and forth. At the end of the day, you have no position. But now you say, well, okay, I could have done this or what about that? Well, if somebody knows something, and they come flying in and they start buying it, I'll pay 261.10, I'll pay 261.20, I'll pay 30. Now, all of a sudden, I am caught short because how the hell am I going to leverage it in the middle of the night? There's no options trade or anything like that. So all of a sudden, it starts moving up, and I'm starting to think, wait a minute, something's going on. I don't know what it is, but I know I'm getting hosed here. Now, guess what? I become a buyer, and I'm chasing it because I'm short. You end up burying people. It becomes like a waterfall. It's not like the first person who goes in and buys 10,000 shares on his own because he heard the information. You can absorb that in a second, but you now you put everybody else in a short position. Now, all of a sudden, if it keeps moving up, now they have to, you don't even have to chase it anymore. They'll do all the chasing for you because you've got those guys short and they're screwed. So, I mean, if you're if you've never been in that position, you don't have the same mentality I have towards people that do that, which is I'll run them over my truck, to be honest with you.
Well, you know, I would argue that there should be no limitations on information. I would argue that there should be none because why? Why do I say that? Because there are laws against it now, but yet people do it, and some people get away with it.
Are they
getting away with it because they're allowed to get away with it, and the others are being prosecuted as a show that we actually care about this law?
Would you mind if I started calling you Little Milty? Somebody asked...
I'm just a firm believer that we are adults. We don't need government. We don't need government to be our mom and our dad. If you treat people as adults, they'll be adults. But if you treat them as children, they'll be children.
Milton Friedman, in response to a question from class, said we don't need any of those rules because the market will police itself.
Yeah.
A la Hal Snar. However, what has changed since then? In those days, you saw the guy you traded with. And if somebody miraculously, 2 minutes before the IBM announcement, every month at 10 o'clock, comes running in at 2 minutes to 10 and does the right thing, after 2 months, you're going to go, wait a minute. This is bull, right? You're not going to... But now what about today? 17 dark pools. Nobody knows who you trade with. And the regulators only go after people that they don't like. So now what?
You know, black markets are a result of government action, making something illegal, or really jacking up the price of it. That's where black markets come. And this is, in my opinion, no different than the black market and pot that exists in New York City, or the black market cigarettes. The black markets of cigarettes and pot in New York City are bigger than the legal markets. I mean, that's where this comes from. It comes from all this activity.
But a government announcement, and you know, they can be very specific.
Yeah, and then you got the capital gains on top of it, right? So if you sell this, maybe you want to sell it because you want to avoid the capital gains tax. I'm not saying do it. I'm not advocating that people do it. But people are probably trying to avoid paying tax.
Well, but there's if you're... I mean, I would never try and muscle in on your math on the stuff you do. I'm saying, if this is what you did all day for 20 years, why everybody who buys... thinks it's going up, right? Everybody sells, thinks, well, maybe it isn't going up, or for tax reasons or whatever. But if somebody actually...
There's a lot of people just guessing, and maybe the person that guessed right is the guy
right,
that's...
Right, but the theory of capital asset pricing models, option models, is there is a steady stream of information, and every tick is the same as another tick. Well, we know that that's not true. Some information is good, and some isn't. Obviously, an earnings day is going to be a propensity of a bigger movement, take Palantir last night, than a regular day. Now, you could have a regular day where somebody comes up with this country, you know, these guys are digging in the backyard of the building and they found gold. I mean, that can happen, right? So you can get the outlier moves coming out of nowhere. Everybody does find out at the same time. But there was a big study done regarding the Fed, and this is where our buddy Pedro got booted out of the... he used to come on the show, got booted out of the Nancy... What's her name, Nancy? Who's the Secretary of Treasury? Janet Yellen. They got booted out of the press conference because he said there was a study that said all these Fed moves, like if a guy goes in the middle of the night and talks about maybe cutting rates or raising rate in China, how there's all of a sudden there's trading going on before the thing that he actually reads a speech, that somebody gets it in advance. That, you know, your Fed announcements are front run, those kinds of things. And the guy said that... And he had a whole list of study for how many years that the Fed stuff is being front run. Now, he said the labor numbers, on the other hand, there was no evidence at all that they were ever front run. So it's not just every piece. And Janet Yellen was pissed, and there was going to be a big investigation into it when she was head of the Fed. She goes, we'll handle it internally. Well, bull bleep on that.
That means we're going to bury it.
Yeah, so Pedro, two months later, said, by the way, how's that investigation going? You could see she stiffened. She got so pissed off. And I don't know what she said, but
how dare you ask me a question? Well, I am the queen.
They got him booted from the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah.
So I'm with you 100%, but I don't think the market could handle everything being done by individuals in a pit anymore. There's way too much trading. But the idea that now it's all, you know, anonymous, I think this information's worth a boatload.
Yeah. Well, think about this. I think the government creates these issues. It creates these problems, creates these really risky assets. I mean, look at what Freddie and Fannie do. I mean, the bank makes a mortgage. They don't keep it in-house because if they kept it in-house, then they believed in it. They believed that the borrower was going to pay all their payments. So what they do is they sell it immediately, right? And then this stuff gets
I think, hell, they have to wait. Nancy would be they wait like 60 days to make sure it's performing or something.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, but still, yeah. I mean, 60 days versus 30 years.
Because when Nancy puts them together, I think if a thing falls apart, she's personally on the hook.
Yeah.
For a couple of months.
Just think, I mean, but 60 days is arbitrary, right? Make it 30 days.
It might be, I'm not so sure, but it's a little while before you can sell it to somebody. You have to at least make the first couple of payments, I think.
Yeah. I think my loan was immediately sold. Maybe the VA loans are different because
could be.
I got this notice in the mail in December. I thought it was a spam saying New Res is going to be, you know, I'm going to make my payments to New Res starting January 1st. I'm like, who's New Res? I've never heard of New Res. And I was skeptical of the letter. But then I was like, well, you know, I don't get a lot of junk mail in North Carolina. So maybe it's a legitimate company. And I got an email from them. And I was worried about clicking on the link. So I went out and did some research, and I found out, yeah, they are a lender. But, yeah, my loan was immediately sold to New Res.
Well, I had a house in Beverly in 1986, and I was there 2 years, Hal, and I think I was on my third savings and loan. I kept going from place to place.
Well, my student loan, every 6 months, my student loan got sold when I was at the state.
Well, savings and loans were starting to – you think – here's one out of the blue – do you think, like me, that Volcker put savings and loans out of business on purpose?
Oh, I think so, yeah. I mean, really think about what government does. Government creates these rules and regulations, these restrictions. When we talk about perfect competition and barriers to entry, those barriers to entry should be replaced with government rules and regulations because the government is there to make sure that the incumbent firm has protection from his or her competitors. And so what does the Fed do? The Fed eliminates all these banks that weren't in its system. Right? I mean, that's what it's doing. I mean, think about TARP. We were talking about TARP earlier. TARP, the first, I guess you can call it the first sovereign wealth fund, a temporary one at that. What did people do at the TARP? What did the banks do with the TARP money? They went out and got bigger.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
They went out and got bigger. They used half the money from TARP to get bigger, right? Which is more risky. So it was definitely cartelizing, in my opinion.
What
cartelized the Federal Reserve banks.
Why do you think... The people, I mean, we talked to kind of somewhat of the theme of today's show, Hal, has been, you know, is government, you know, as Carl was talking about, is government all bleeped up to the point, but there used to be, if there's honest people in government, then there's honest government. But we almost got to the point now where it seems like everybody thinks that everybody's cheating, everything.
There can be honest people in government, but the fact that government is not disciplined by the market corrupts it. I mean, you look at a public school. If it doesn't have a competitor, it's the teachers and the principals can be really nice people. They can be really good. But who are they accountable to? They're accountable to the governor.
But
they're not accountable to the parents.
Well, let me ask you this. One of the differences, you were mentioning how many people when Roosevelt was in charge. You know, I get such a bad feeling about that guy because all he did was kill stuff.
Yeah. His write-up, you know, in the Spanish-American War where he goes over that hill and in Cuba. I mean, talk about just nonsense.
But, you know, I read this book. He didn't want to leave the battlefield. He loved it.
Yeah. Yeah.
He loved the smell.
He reminds me of Joaquin Phoenix's character in Gladiator.
He stabs
Russell Crowe's character before.
Yeah, the fight.
They're lifted up onto the floor of the Coliseum so he can beat. Yeah, that's who it reminds me of.
Well, you know, when you were 12-ish, I know what I was doing at 12-ish. Well, this time of the day, I've been ready to school, but afterward, I'd be looking for what time of the year is this? Well, this time of the year, it'd be touch football in the backyard, too cold for baseball. I'd be looking for doing something. He used to go out and shoot birds and have them stuffed.
Yeah.
Does anybody?
Well, if you read about him from Murray Rothbard's perspective, his whole conservation movement at the turn of the century was not about conserving the environment. It was about locking away land so his friends didn't have to face competitors in, say, logging. That's what really was his drive to preserve the land.
But we were mentioning earlier about, you know, the kind of the growth of government, the growth of, you know, we even are today with the network we have. A new president comes in, all these people leave. It's like I read once, it could be wrong, 1,200 people or something resign. And, you know, every secretary of state, but all the undersecretaries, all these people all resign when a new guy comes in. And in Britain, those are, and I think British people are generally a little better educated and more honest than our people, more educated for sure, especially out of primary and secondary. I don't think it's even close there. They, if you come in as prime minister, the person who's the head of, you know, the Caribbean State Department or something, is somebody like your wife who speaks 8 different languages or something, knows the area, and has been there, has been doing the job 20 years, and she's incredibly qualified. That these are like professionals in these spots. They're not political hacks. I mean, it's a I don't know which is better, but it's different. And on one hand, why would you fire somebody down there who knows 5 languages and knows all these people? Now, if they're an embedded crook and all they're doing is taking money for all the time they're in there, well, yeah, but then it, then that goes to the person and not the spot, right?
Well, the problem I have with that kind of career bureaucrat is, suppose they see the world through conservative lenses and they're serving a liberal prime minister. Are they, and the people voted not for her, but for the liberal prime minister, right? So this liberal prime minister has a vision and he wants to take the country a certain direction. If you're the bureaucrat that is a conservative woman working for this agency and you're working against the prime minister, I think that prime minister has the right to remove you because you're not...
I think they probably have a right to remove. What I'm saying is the idea that you want to just lose all that expertise and start... I mean, every time somebody has, in my lifetime, has come after this country, they've done it the minute regime has changed, right? Cuban Missile Crisis, 9/11. It was always right after a new guy got in, right?
Yeah.
Didn't they blow up the coal right after he got in?
Well, as a libertarian, I voted the way I did because I wanted RFK Jr. to be at Department of Health and Human Services. I wanted Tulsi Gabbard somewhere in national security. I was hoping she'd become the Department of Defense Secretary. I wanted them. I voted for them, former Democrats. I voted for Sheehan to have some position, right? And the reason why I voted for these people, not Trump, I voted for these people, is because I wanted them to neuter the state. And as a libertarian, that's how I voted. I wanted the state neutered.
Did you vote for Patel because he doesn't even know what the term we means?
What's that?
You vote for Patel? We can't figure out what the term we means?
We.
Weed? In a lot of his tweets, he was talking about how we did all this stuff on January 6th and got the movie made and all the other stuff. Yeah. And then in front of Congress, he goes, well, I didn't do any of that stuff. He goes, well, they played it back for him. Like, it says we. Well, yeah, but I don't mean like that kind of we. what kind of we? You got a mouse in your pocket? What kind of we are you talking about?
Well, again, I didn't vote for Trump. I voted for Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
That guy's kind of a weird duck.
I voted for Sheehan. I voted for Tulsi Gabbard. I wanted the wars to end. You know, Lizzie Graham is still wanting to make war with all these countries. He wants to go to war with Iran. He wants to continue the war in Israel. He wants to continue the war in Ukraine. And I want Congress to enact a law that says a senator that votes to go to war needs to put some boots on and go serve on the front line. Because that guy is crazy, in my opinion.
You know, you're
voting for every dang war in the planet.
You know,
he wants war.
Your best buddy. Who's the guy that... Who's the real liberal filmmaker? What the hell's his name?
Heavyset guy. He did Sick, right?
Hey, what?
He did the documentary Sick.
I think, what the hell's his name? But he
hasn't been in the news lately.
No, yeah, I don't think he's feeling too hot, whatever. But he, when we did the went into Iraq, he showed up on Capitol Hill with a petition asking the senators and representatives if their kids could go first, and nobody signed it.
They should serve.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I'm going to go further. They should be on the front line. They should put those combat boots and go pick up a rifle and defend that hill. Take the hill.
What did my cousin say to me once? Young people die and the old people make money from it.
Yeah. Yep.
But we got a little bit of time here, and you are a professor. I've been trying to explain tariffs to people and how they can be. I think you were on the show when Trump was in office the first time. And he put tariffs on Canada, right? Or was going to? Yeah. And I dug out somewhere. You can go. All this stuff's available. I mean, for a schlump like me, I dug out the tariffs on, like, Canada back and forth. Hell, it was. I got stuck on page, 1,050 or something. It had to do with all the cheeses that go back and forth.
Yeah.
Cottage cheese, low curd, small curd, 2% milk fat.
It sounds like the wage setting commission in Baltimore City.
Yeah, it is. The thing had to be, there had to be 50 different things on cream cheese. Or not cream cheese, on cottage cheese. I'm sitting there going, and each one of these lines means something to somebody. They called somebody up and said, hey, wait a minute. I'm the guy who makes small curd, 2% milk fat, something cottage cheese.
Lower my tariff to 5%. Yeah,
exactly right. And most of them had a zero on them, but some of them had numbers on them. I'm thinking, who does all this stuff?
The people that had zero as a tariff were probably people who had friends or family close to the guy, right?
If you were doing this, and I was trying to talk to Kenny about it earlier, if you were doing this in class and somebody said, hey, Professor Hal, how does this tariff works? I don't even know. I think I could go through from my education.
You can model in a general way, but you could model.
But how do you? But the classic examples are somebody makes a competing product and sends it to you, a Mercedes versus a Cadillac. How do you model it when the company who's they're putting it on is Ford or General Motors, and they're your own companies, and the stuff goes back and forth three times? How do you even figure out who's winning on that deal?
Yeah, well, I think the way we model tariffs in economics and in micro principles is we just assume that all imports are taxed, right? But that's not how it works in the real world, right? And then we assume that the product comes fully assembled. And that's one of the problems with economics is this idea of homogeneity, right, in products, this idea that a supply curve is upward sloping, when in fact it's probably a vertical line, because an entrepreneur rolls the dice and says, I'm not going to produce 5,000, I'm going to produce 10,000. And then that entrepreneur makes 10,000 available, right? The upward sloping supply curve ignores the time component between the decision on how many to make and the time it takes to make that amount and then offer it for sale on the market. So economics makes a lot of simplifying assumptions that are just not realistic. And what I try to do in my microeconomic class, I try to explain that and I try to model it more realistically. And there's really, the models can get really complicated when you're talking about how this part was imported to the United States from Mexico, and then it was exported to the production line. It was exported to Canada, and then they added something to it, and then it was exported to Mexico. And I think the reason why that happens is because the government creates all these convoluted rules and regulations that overcomplicate the market process. If they got out of the business of doing that and let the consumers...
Well, what do you do if you got a BMW plant in Indiana, and all of a sudden they put a big tariff on the motor to where you can't compete and you lay everybody off? Is that help or hurt?
Yeah, exactly. But that's what government does. It creates all these convoluted rules and regulations. And I think the people that know how to navigate that world, man, they love it. And they want it even more complicated. So we have an economy that is a Rube Goldberg machine. The Federal Reserve is a Rube Goldberg machine. They make a simple transaction overly complicated, right? It should just, you should open the fridge and pour your milk. But instead, some guy invented some machine that has a robot opening the door that lifts up the milk, that pours it down some chute, that then throws it into some weight scale. That's exactly what we have here. And that's why you have these really incredibly complicated assembly systems, because people are trying to figure out how to get around all those speed bumps.
Well, other than front-running trades, and I know that's a snide comment, I don't the purpose of this stuff, if you want, I mean, in the end, I think what Trump has mentioned, and I would think would be one of the goals if you're actually going to do this, if somehow or another you feel that your people are disadvantaged, maybe in China because you can use 9-year-old people to work over there and here, you think your people are somewhere being disadvantaged, so you're going to put an extra tax on somebody to even it up. That if you were going to even talk about what rational use of tariffs there would be, and you as an economist might say that never works that way, which I might be happy to agree with you, but if you were going to do that, then you'd have to have some sort of a knowledge that if we're going to put a tax on widgets, and because we'd really like the widgets made here, what's going to give a two goofballs like Hal and Chief confidence that they can go out and raise some capital, get a loan, plan on a widget factory in a year from now or 18 months from now, start popping out widgets, and the minute they get the loan and have the place up and running, you don't change your policy. I don't think the current administration, you could never make that call with these guys.
Yeah, in 2 years, the House could change.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, the House is, just reversing everything Trump does. That's the problem with democracy. That's why we need rule of law.
Well, but also, he could just say, all right, enough, I got my pound of flesh, and he changed his mind this weekend in 48 hours. So, yeah. You and I, hopefully we didn't go get our loan.
Yeah. I mean, the way the government is being run right now, and I think the fact that the government employees are not disciplined by the market, they're not disciplined by the market. I think it creates this perverse incentive for otherwise good people to do what? To make things as complicated as possible. The more complicated something is, the more job security I think they have.
But why hell? I mean, we had, hopefully we'll be on again this week, my buddy Bill Moriarty, he's a civil engineer, and he's been doing this his whole life. And he says virtually every state he's ever worked with, the people in the highway departments in the states with bridges and highways and stuff, he goes, they're virtually all competent, very educated. They know their crap. He goes, and they're a pleasure to work with. I mean, I don't buy the part that everybody who works for the state can't wait to get his feet up on the desk and do nothing.
I don't agree. I agree with you. But the problem is, if we had a market system, I think the roads would be built for longer than, they would last longer than a couple of years. I remember living in Michigan, and I'd drive to the plant. This is where I'd after got the Navy, and I spent a year in college, and I thought, I don't want to be an accountant. So I got a job in Michigan where I worked as a float glass plant mechanic, electrician, welder, a jack of all trades in Newport, Michigan, or Guardian.
You're like the guy in a commercial, the electric commercial?
Yeah, I lived in Newport with my buddy Sean. We had a house. We had a rich person's, cottage.
Yeah.
On a river. Our backyard was a river. He'd go ice fishing on it. And I lived there, and then I worked at Guardian Glass in Carleton, Michigan. And I remember it was October, and the interstate that I drove on was just filled with 3-inch deep potholes every 10 feet. And right before the election, the governor comes out and he puts a layer of asphalt over the road to cover up all the potholes. And it was awesome. Well, guess how long it lasted? About November 15th or November 20th, all that asphalt crumbled and we were back to potholes. Now, the people working on the roads, all probably very smart, they're not disciplined by the market. If you're disciplined by the market, you don't build a road for an election. You build a road to last 10 years. Well, and that's the problem.
You build a road based on what you think is going to be running on it for how long. And if you screw it up by your estimates, it's not going to last that long.
Yeah.
I mean, but
you got roads in Europe that last 10 years.
Well,
we have roads that last a couple years.
Well, I think I actually, for whatever reason, because I ride them all the time, I'm pretty privy to how the stuff done on the expressways here have been done. And when they first did the Dan Ryan, they had the expressways in the local, right? And the locals were supposed to take all the trucks. And they estimated a certain amount of trucks versus cars. And I believe the express lanes were 8 inches of concrete and the locals were 10. And they used, those things they put down, and they did the things you put down, little metal things that you pour, and they're in there with in the concrete.
Rebar?
Yeah, they were the original kind you'd use for like a crummy road. Well, of course, after a period of 5 or 6 years or 10 years, the amount of truck traffic and the overloads and stuff were way more than they expected. So, okay, back when I was in college, redid the rant. Well, now all of a sudden we're using rebar, and we're doing 12 inches, not 10. All right? So that lasted a long period of time. And then what you say, you end up getting a spot that degrades, and then you dig that out, and you fill the concrete up, you fill the base, and then every once in a while you resurface with asphalt. And the asphalt can be done on the base probably two or three times. First one probably lasts 6 years, then 4 years, then 2 years. Then you have to go back and say, okay, we got to pull the whole thing out again and try it all over again. Well, now you see when they build it. Now the rebar is covered with that green stuff, right? Because now it can't rust. Because what would happen is if there was a crack, the water would get into the rebar and start to rust it. And then the rust would then separate the rebar from the concrete and you get a pothole.
Yeah.
And well, now you see them building these things. Hell, you look at what are they doing? Building the bridge? The entire thing now is tied together with rebar like if it was a bridge.
Yeah.
Even though it's not. Now, that's going to last 20 years. But it's so different than the one they put on originally because now their knowledge of the traffic flow and the incredible abuse these things take is just different.
Well, I mean, just think about what the weather does.
I mean,
there's a reason why water expands when it freezes. I think water is the only liquid that expands when it freezes.
Well, you know, you watch what they do now. They used to crush the gravel down to where it was really, really tight, and they put the concrete over that. Now they don't. They put a layer of asphalt down over the gravel and put the concrete on the asphalt.
That's interesting.
Because it'll allow some of the water can't get out, or water won't get down there, and it also gives a little bit of give down there. And
geography-wise, is it geologically, I guess, what it does is it gets in between the cracks,
yeah.
And then when it freezes, it expands and turns rock into dust eventually.
Well, that's right. But
it does that to the roads too. So you have to figure out how to keep the water out of the roads.
But I think that there used to be, I mean, so there still are. There's a lot of dedicated teachers. You're right. Should there be competition in that? But there are people.
But they have to be disciplined by the market.
I see the idea of competitive in my industry, allegedly being an investment advisor, which I am, is competitive.
Yeah.
I see people, I would never give them my money. They couldn't hedge something or design something for me personally if their life depended on it. Yet they're perfectly capable of putting your money in the market, charging a bunch of dough, and going playing golf. Okay. I mean, that's what they do. And over the last 10 years, they've done fine because the market's enough money to go straight up. But, I mean, would I count on them to put the specific strategy together? They wouldn't know what I was talking about.
Yeah.
You can't just put a label on somebody. I mean, I think there's an awful lot of professors around that do nothing but take it as exactly. easy as they can. But I don't think you do that. You sure as hell don't sound like it.
You know, I always tell students this. If you're on a small basketball – the reason why small schools, basketball teams aren't as good as big schools is a small school might only have 5 guys going out for basketball. And if there's nobody on the bench – nobody competing for the jobs, you don't have to be very good, right? But if you're at a big school and there's 4 sets of 5 and all those sets of 5 want to be the starting lineup, that makes everybody better. Competition is a beautiful thing.
You could have given me all the competition on earth. I still can't jump.
Well, my brother Rod, he had like a 1-inch vertical, but he would do these layups where he'd spin the ball off the backboard. Yeah. And I would be up there 30 inches above the ground with my hand trying to block his dang layup. And
He made up for it. I had to do that too.
Anyway. It was always like above my fingertip.
Thank you much. Everything. What are you doing Super Bowl? Who do you like?
I may or may not watch. I'm just tired of the Taylor Swift Chiefs. You know, I'm going to root for – I love Jalen Hurts. I think he's just
a
really good
player.
Guy. And then his receiver driving around in a Honda, the guy reading the book on the sideline. What's his name? The big talented receiver they got?
Oh, yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, he's reading the book on the sideline, and it goes #1 on Amazon. I love Jalen Hurts. I think he's just a really good guy. I mean, he has this modest apartment in Philadelphia. He's banking all of his money. He bought his mom a modest house, I think, in Texas. Paid it off. Just banking his money. Really smart kid. And I love that receiver he throws, too. Just really solid.
All right, so you're on those guys. All right, well.
And I got buddies from Philadelphia, and I like the blue-collar nature of the Eagles.
You like the blue-collar fans there. Yeah, they're blue-collar, right? They're something.
I love the rowdy fans, man. I mean, you go to a football game, you know, You're gonna be an obnoxious butt for the most part, right?
Oh, good.
That's just part of being at a game. If you don't like it.
All right. Well, I'm kind of in the middle on this one. I actually am much more impressed.
Nobody's heard more abuse than basketball officials, man. I can be on the basketball court, and I just tune people out. I got 1,000 people behind me screaming at me, telling me I'm the worst official in the world. My partner go, hey, what were those fans telling you? And I'm like, well, I don't know. I was just standing there. I didn't hear anybody. You just tune it out, man.
Yeah, I used to do that when I pitched in softball. It was always, especially on the north side, there always goes some lippy guy on the other team doing
something. Or in New York, there's some retired guy, 80 years old.
Yeah.
Screaming at a player, you know, and the umpire, like, who the umpire doesn't care which one of these teams wins, and this guy's back to ripping like he's making $300,000 a year,
yeah,
you know, Major League Baseball.
I don't know, maybe with all this betting now, you never know. All right, buddy, talk at you next week. S&P futures up 50 cents, NASDAQ futures up 38, so huge turnaround from last night. We were up really a lot until China announced retaliatory tariffs, so I got to get ahead of some of these announcements, Hal. Maybe the Chinese guys will lead. What are we going to pay them to give us this?
Well, maybe if you're nicer to Trump, he'll slip you some information.
Well, I don't want to be nice to Z. I'd be nicer to Trump. I would do that. All right. Talk to you next week. Good job, Ricky. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
That's all, folks.